Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Zeke, and that was a very, very sappy version of our theme song, Do You Want to Dance, by the West Wind Ensemble. And I figured everybody knows the song. This is Movement Museum, where we talk about dance in Montreal on your radio. It is 2:05. As I said, my name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina. We have a very, very, actually, we're going to have two very, very, very special in-studio guests. But my heart is going about, 50 miles an hour. So before we introduce everybody, let me read Reminiscences of a Dancing Man by Thomas Hardy. Who now remembers Almack's balls? Willis is sometime named in those two smooth-floored upper halls, for faded ones so famed, where as we trod to trilling sound, the fancied phantoms stood around, or joined us in the maze of the powdered deers from Georgian years, whose dust lay in sightless sealed-up beers, the fairest of former days. Who now remembers gay Cremorne and all his jaunty jills, and those wild whirling figures born of Julian's grand quadrilles? With hats on head and morning coats, there footed to his prancing notes our partner girls and we. And the gas jets winked, and the lusters clinked, and the platforms throbbed as arms inlinked, we moved the minstrels. Who now recalls the crowded rooms of old Yclept the Argyle, where to the deep drums polka booms we hopped in standard style? Whither have danced those damsels now? Is death the partner who doth mew their wormy chaps and bear? Do their specters spin like sparks within the smoky halls of the Prince of Sin to a thunderous Julian air? That was by Thomas Hardy, and I just completely stunk up the joint by reading it.
Oh, no.
However, enough of that. I'm going to try and get your last name right. I apologize in advance because I'm likely to butcher it as I did the poem, but Ava von Genzi.
Almost Genzi.
That's right. Yes, which one was one of the co-founders of the Ballet Jazz de Montréal back in the 1970s. And yes, as I've been mentioning since almost the beginning of the show, I'm endlessly fascinated about learning the history of dance here in Montreal. And, who better to talk to than somebody who made history? And yeah, where do you want to start? Bettina, you want to go?
Oh, yes. How did you get into the jazz ballet? I mean, because when you were starting off, were you trained more traditionally? Because the jazz is something that came later, like, that's a more recent dance style.
So. I try to answer your first question, okay?
Yes.
I cannot remember the time when I was not dancing, okay? I just love to dance like many other little girls love to dance, especially they dream about being on stage, put on the tutu. That was not my interest. I was just living dance. It was like I felt dance. It's coming from my heart. We are one. Mm-hmm. And when I was 9 years old, my parents helped me to start my professional training, because you have to start very early, especially when you want to become a classical ballet dancer. Right. I'm Hungarian, and in Budapest I was enrolled in the Russian Ballet Academy, and I was there for quite a long time before I received a scholarship, and I went to Austria, Salzburg, to continue, because that was a very hard times in Hungary with the Russians and the war times, okay? And my parents were very happy that I could leave the country, and Salzburg, I arrived to the point that my very, very first professional engagement I received there. And after I wanted to see the world. When you are young, you want to travel, and being a dancer, you really don't have to speak the language if you want to find a place you could fit in, what you know already. So with government assistance in the immigration law, I was accepted to come to Canada, and I landed in Winnipeg in 1948.
Wow.
And that was the time when the Winnipeg Ballet Club started to arrive to the point to be professional. And I, coming from Europe, I couldn't believe it that at that time there was no professional classical ballet company nowhere in Canada. So my first pioneering years began with the Winnipeg Ballet, and when Princess Elizabeth came to visit, we had a royal performance, and when she became queen, she granted the royal title to the Winnipeg Company. So this was a very, very beautiful beginning in my career in Canada.
Yeah, and I probably shouldn't say that in Montreal, but the Royal Winnipeg is really my favorite dance company.
Yes.
I just love it. It makes such an impression on me when I first saw it.
And it's the first Canadian professional ballet company.
Wow. So you were a pioneer in a way.
I mean, the company became professional when I arrived. But you know, when I'm telling you pioneering, there was very little financial support, and we all did it for the love of dancing. Plus, we were teaching, and we were in many ways involved. Naturally, the most important was that the company should continue and have a great success, which actually, right now, the company where it is, it's an internationally known, beautiful company, and they will come to Montreal in the fall season.
Yes.
And I'm very happy I am still. This was for me such an unbelievable beginning in a new country. And my partner was Arnold Spohr, who later became artistic director of the company for many, many, many years. And he was the one who put the company on an international level. Mm-hmm. And the 50s was the year when, after the National Company, National Ballet in Toronto became, started, and then in Montreal, Madame Shiriaev. And when we were in Montreal, Madame Shiriaev saw me in the company of the Winnipeg and approached me whether I would like to join her. And I was very happy in Winnipeg that there was a big, big fire and everything was destroyed. So for 1 year, there was no chance for me to stay there. I accepted her offer and I came to Montreal in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since.
You've been
and
here.
Then I started my second pioneering.
Wow.
With Le Grand Ballet, mm-hmm. which was Madame Shiriaev on television. And television was always pioneering.
That's right.
So that was another pioneering. And you see, when I'm talking about this, nothing could take the place of that beautiful excitement and beauty to see something developing, something growing, something living. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
It is the greatest happiness what I can tell you, which in Europe I could have never experienced. So Canada gave my chance to live my dreams, and it's just a beautiful country.
Yeah, so you created more than dancers. You also created a company and an audience and, basically, do you find that the dance in Canada has a different flavor now than the dance in Europe? I mean, you brought a lot of Europe with you when you came.
Oh, yes.
How has it changed here?
I mean, I was Russian trained, you know, and the company in Winnipeg was the Royal Academy of Dance, for London, England. But I did all my exams for the diploma, and it took me a little bit of time, just a little bit, you know. The syllabus work for the academies very how should I say, it's excellent. But the Russian work, it has a little bit of, you know, the Slavic fire, passion, which at that time, okay, everything is changing, was difficult. I was a little bit different in the company to get used to, calmed on. And Arnold Spohr was a very technician, you know. He was a wonderful musician at the same time, but he had to really, we had a little problems to tame me.
There, when you switched from the Grand Ballet Canadien to the starting the Ballet Jazz, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, but it also was a very large shift in style as well.
I mean, the Ballet Jazz style didn't really exist, but I was a classical dancer and I fell in love with jazz, okay, and Hungarian temperament. It suited me very well. I was going whenever I had time to New York to study with the great masters, and I was also invited to Banff, to the Banff School of Fine Arts, where Brian McDonald was director and Arnold Spohr as well. And that was when I could start to find my own voice in jazz, which was ballet and jazz combined. And this is where the name came for the company, Le Ballet Jazz, which really this didn't exist in Canada. This name didn't exist anywhere.
And so how did you, where did you come up with the concept, and how did your style, can you explain how your style differs from what is now known as sort of jazz ballet, or, does that make sense?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, jazz is a very, very great world. Just like in music, you know, and this is, if you arrive to a certain point that you feel, how you feel about the music, that's the whole thing. And for me, it was my former training, the technique from the classical. I just changed it. I put the dynamics in it, which in classical ballet, it's very different. You know, though in jazz, naturally, the blues, it has lots of lyrical moments and lyrical, beautiful, but it's more dramatic. It's more sort of human. The approach is much, much different, and I felt like I was ready to try to put together my human feelings with my love of dance. And this is the way I think I could express myself.
Was it a slow progression to there, or was there a sort of eureka, oh my God, this is what I have to do moment?
You said it. When I went to New York to study, you know, I just went on. Brian McDonald said, you must go on and take classes and see what's going on, because he has done lots of work in Banff School of Fine Arts. He created the musical division, you know, musical comedy. He was in the opera, in classical. He did everything that time. And then I went to Luigi, who was my my greatest inspiration, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. I was just taking the class and after stayed there and watched the next class and the next class, and I just felt, this is it. And then I came back to Montreal and started to work alone, you know. And when I arrived to the point, I started to invite other dancers from Le Grand Ballet, from here and there. And when I was then teaching in Banff, I had a follower in Banff several years, and these dancers were following me to come to Montreal because they wanted to stay with me. And this is the whole way the ballet jazz came to being. I, through my dancing, Eddie Toussaint was one of them who was in the classes, and he loved it very much, and he was much younger than me, and he said, Yes, yes, yes. It has to be doing. You have to get going. We have to get together. And then I was with Genevieve Salveng in the Grand Ballet, and she was very much involved in Jeunesse Musicale as the president organizer. And I felt like with Eddie, the artistic side will be secure, but to find somebody who would create a board of directors, we wouldn't have the time for that. So I invited Genevieve, and this is how the trio came to being. Myself, Eddie, and Genevieve, at the president of the board of directors. Oh. And the company still lives on, so it was a good beginning.
Was there any specific place? Was there a cafe, a bar, somebody's apartment where you all decided to, we're going to start the company?
I was teaching in several places, mm-hmm. Madame Zari's studio, and we can rent it, you know. It was not, we were having then later on our own studios, and the most beautiful studios were on St. Catherine Street between Drummond and Mountain, the old Radio Canada television, yes. Studios, King's Hall was it called, and that was a beautiful studio, but that was already later on.
Yes.
The very first studio we had, it was way out, now I don't remember the place, but it was a big studio because the school was going very well, lots of students, and it was something unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It was like a forest fire. It just started and it was getting bigger and bigger. In this case, it was a good thing that it got getting bigger and bigger.
So you were teaching as part of the Ballet Jazz de Montréal at the same time, and there was a school involved, or was it just straight performances?
Oh, sure. I mean, the school, at the beginning, was the biggest support financially. You know, by the time Genevieve worked on the board of directors, and by the time we got financial support, you know, the school supported the company. And there was definitely, without the school, we couldn't have done it. And I had dancers from Banff who followed me, but I found beautiful dancers in Montreal from Le Grand Ballet Canadien, and some of them came to take classes, and later on they joined the company, like Nicole Vachon, who was with Le Grand Ballet Canadien, and after she felt like it would be ready for a change. And then I had her, and she was a beautiful, very beautiful dancer. And Natalie Brewer came from the school of Le Grand Ballet, and she was one of my leading girls for a while, for whom I did ballets like the leading in Jeremy and many, many other things. So it was a very... Everything was just working together. It has to succeed. And it was not only me. Something in the air, I don't know how do you call those happy moments, that it had to happen. I believe in that very much.
How large was the company when it started?
First, it was quite large because Eddie Toussaint was at the university in the physical education department, and he started there getting the students and started to teach there what he was doing with me. And he had a company, you will hear from him when you have retro, and when we arrived to the point, okay, now we start, he brought his some of the dancers. So at the beginning, I had the classical side of the jazz plus my own ballet jazz style, and he had the university people who really didn't do any classical training before. So the two sides got together, and with a regular classical training for the company dancers, it get the repertoire was designed that all of the dancers had a chance to participate. And then later on, naturally, those who start and kept the rigorous training. And Eddie brought some very lovely boys who were naturally started a little later, but trained in physical education. So it was a very good getting together of two companies.
How many teachers did you have when you started out? Because it was also a fairly new form of dance.
Yes, I mean, mainly myself and Eddie, okay? Mm-hmm. And then I had a teacher's course. And the teacher's course, it was not the first year, but it was working. And they were regular classes for teachers in my style. Mm-hmm. And it came out very successful for the beginners, which is always hard to find those who really can start and have the patience of a good base. Mm-hmm. Because with Eddie, we were more on the professional level, working and doing choreographies. On those whom I trained, it was definitely for a good base. And from then on, they continued to go to another level, those who arrived already for a good basic.
So you had two tasks. First of all, you're also a choreographer, and creating a choreography and teaching are two different things. And then you also had to train the trainers. You have to create teachers who
yes, definitely there was a syllabus work, which are the first thing you teach, because you know from the outside dance can look very jazz, you know, if you don't have a trained eye. Mm. You know where the serious technique is involved, because you know all you have to do is in jazz put a little bit of hip, little bit of shoulder, little bit jazz it up, you know. But when it comes to pirouettes, to big jumps, to lifts, you know, I mean, that's starting to show you. I mean, you know the program which we were just talking about it, about you think you can dance and those things. It's unbelievable what they can do nowadays, you know. And this is something that they definitely have technique.
That's right.
But for the classical training, and we added so much classical training to those who were really classically trained, and for the others, slowly introduce the classical base. And it worked, because they who came, they needed a challenge. And classical ballet is a challenge, you know? And they wanted that hard work and to find the result. And if you do the technique, you have the result in your body, you know? You can do not one period. You can do two, three, four. You can jump bigger. You can, I mean, a training is to give you freedom. That's the training. And the others who don't have the training, they repeat the same thing. Hip to the right, shoulder shake. You know, they don't have a repertoire of, a vocabulary of dance.
And for you as a choreographer, you need somebody who can express your ideas.
The dancer is an instrument in the choreographer's hand, okay? So whatever you ask, look at these programs. They have every time a new choreographer. They have an instrument. You have to do no matter what the choreographer wants. I mean, it is unbelievable. And I tell you, dance in the last, since I am in Canada, 1948, no classical company. And now what's going on? Three major companies, international known, and so many others. Modern, naturally, right now we live the modern age. Mm-hmm. The moderns came into the foreground, but the classical will be always there.
It will never die.
Never, never
Because
die.
It's the basis, right? It's like learning to draw in perspective before you do abstract art.
Okay, I finished.
You're welcome to stay and stuff like that. We have some new in-studio guests. We're going to take advantage of this sort of stuff to do a slight break.
Okay.
Some things here. We will be back after this.
What yes. about you?
You can be on the air as well. We have everybody in studio now. I have to turn on my microphone. I have to say that we have everybody in studio now. We just got joined by, Jean-Marc Généreux. Am I getting your name close as well?
Absolutely perfect.
Okay. Who is a judge on So You Think You Can Dance Canada, and then also, my understanding, is a choreographer on So You Think You Can Dance the American version, and I've heard you're doing stuff for Funky Town as well and all over the place.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm a little busy, but I love it.
Ms. Von Jensie, please stay, because I would love to have your input as well.
Yeah, you're both choreographers, so you can talk shop.
Yes, let's do it.
I'd rather be just listening.
And so, yeah, my first question to you, Jean-Marc, is I understand that you've been doing an awful lot of this Q&A for the past 2 days.
Yes, but I love it. It's great. It's a fun time right now. In a couple of days from now, on August 15, we'll premiere our first day or first city of we auditioned many months ago. It will be Toronto on the 15th, mm-hmm. August 15, and it will go through August 19 every night, 2 hours a night on CTV. Mm-hmm. It's going to be crazy. It will be wall to wall. But
my question is, what is the question that you haven't been asked that you want to be asked?
What I want to be asked. No, I like to be fired at. I don't like to choose the human issue.
Okay, because that's what I realize, because I know that just being asked the same questions over and over and over again, you realize, my head's about to explode. But if you want me to ask you questions, I'm doing my best to ask ones that haven't been asked before.
Go ahead.
Okay. Since both of you were choreographers, one of the things that I've noticed is that, in most performances that I've seen recently, it's the and this is on stage performances, it's the choreographer that is king, queen, the large and in charge. On the So You Think You Can Dance shows, it's the dancers that are the king, and they sort of give lip service to the choreographers. How do you feel about that, especially since you're on both sides?
It's very interesting, and actually a great question. At the end of the day, when you are in a situation where you give everything you got, everything you experience, you try to package it the best way possible for the dancers, for the TV, for the viewers, it's almost not the extreme, but it's like you let go of your children going and do their thing and get their fame. If you're there, if you've been asked to choreograph, because you've done good enough to be asked. And that's already the reward, to be asked to choreograph for those kids. And after that, it's totally okay to take one step back and let get their fame, because you got to start somewhere. And you look at it and you hope they're going to do well, but it's a process also. It's a competition. So it's not like you creating a show, or you creating this particular piece for an audience. It's a competition, so you help, you do what you can, and after that, you let them win their own victory,
And so, is that one of the reasons why you're doing other choreography, where the choreographer can be king, or did that just was it a natural progression?
You know, I teach ballroom dancing, and it's called now dance sport. I'm used to train people, and I'm used to do part of the work. So I'm okay if I don't get name, or I don't get a recognition. For me, I already get a recognition, the fact that they listen to me. And I'm changing and modify their behavior, which is a very difficult thing because you work with artists. You work with people with passion. And hopefully, you will influence and guide them. And it's okay if at the end your name is not mentioned. It's fine. It's great when they do it. And it feels great. But I think the end result is more important than the print.
Okay. And then also, one of the things that I'm fascinated with the whole So You Think You Can Dance is, in there was an article that was written about you in the National Post, where, if I can get the quote, it's, in order to train the dancers, you do an hour and a half on the first day, 3 hours on the next day, and an hour on the third day, and on the day of the performance, you help. And it's there, especially in speaking with other types of dancers, realize that there's like six performances they do a year, and they train 5 days a week. I'm just absolutely amazed at how much gets compressed into such a short amount of time.
Every word, every expression, every moment counts. It's a little bit like living in an emergency room. Somebody is going to die at the end of the week, unfortunately. But it's you're going to try to do everything in your power, in your emotion, in your passion, to make their competition and their moment not necessarily more valuable, but definitely try to get some vote. And you are limited. It's a marathon. Those 4 days are so intense. And at the end, hopefully the kids does enjoy what he does, not feel any compete. I hope in those very limited minutes or hours, you give enough, we definitely give enough material, but hopefully they have time to digest it and be able to perform it.
So when you are creating a choreography for these dancers, do you keep them in mind, so catering a little bit to their abilities, or do you do the opposite and challenge them?
Definitely, because of the amount of hours we have, the limited amount of hours, you got to go there with a plan. Mm. You might going to modify part of the plan, but they don't ask me to do contemporary, they don't ask me to do jazz, they ask me to do ballroom dancing. So I'm trying to stay in the format, and if I have an amazing ballet dancer, I'm going to tag onto their capacity. If a great jazz dancer, I'm going to go straight to jazz or contemporary or hip-hop. I'm going to try to speak their language, get the lingo to make sure that I get my work, and if I can enrich with their quality of dance, I will. But I have to come with a plan, and in my plan is ballroom dancing.
Yeah, but so what you are saying is your plan is ballroom dancing, but you work also with the special abilities of each dancer who comes to you and kind of weave that in.
Absolutely. If I know there is extreme flexibility in this particular dancer or amazing speed, I'm going to definitely go right in and use it. But at the end, I cannot turn, I cannot facilitate everything too. It's a competition. You got to challenge that. And we have to also look at it as a journey. And if they learn nothing through your lesson, it's a little bit, I don't want to turn it too much to a video game, but when you think about a video game, you go level one, level two, level three. And to do level two, you gotta pass level one. So you have to get this weapon, this shield, this to defend yourself to the next level. So ballroom will show partnering, connection, emotion with two people, not two soloists dancing around each other. They need to have this marriage. I need to teach that. So if I'm know the guy can do great jump and great spin, and that's all I give it to them, that makes my job easy, but they don't learn anything.
Yeah, so, I remember seeing hip-hop artists having a really hard time because they used to just shine by themselves and now they get a girl on their hand and it's tough. What did you find is the hardest challenge for you? What type of dancer?
You know, when I get the break dancers, the b-boys, they feel pretty tight in Latin pants because I guess they never felt their thighs, you know, because they wear their jeans down to their knees. It's very interesting. All of a sudden, say, like, wow, I got two legs. You know, it's very interesting. And you make them move their hips and you teach a different language. I always teach dancing like blocks. Block number one, two, three, four, head, shoulder, ribcage, and hips. And I always describe it like four basketballs on top of each other and they go to different direction. My job is to realign that and make them conquer different direction, different quality they have already in their body, but they're not aware of it. It's a little bit like if you take somebody who speaks Spanish and you're going to teach them French. You take somebody who speaks Portuguese, you make them speak French or Italian. There is like words, then they sound alike, but they say it never doesn't sound like it. Yes, it does. Try it this way. Try this way. So you make them discover new capacity in their body, but it's very tough for them to pass the dress code.
So, and you're also a judge, but you're not a judge. And on the American ones, choreographed. Here in Canada, you just judge. It would be hard to do both, right? First you teach them, then you tell them.
Conflict of interest.
Yes.
Yeah, the conflict of interest is sometimes is with the other judges. Because since I'm there the entire season, they might going to look at me like, oh, we're going to be gentle with Jean-Marc. We're going to be gentle with this choreography. This way, I'm not in the way. I only do opening numbers, and which is group numbers. Then I can teach to all the kids all at the same time and make sure that I don't favorite anybody. And not get attached more to one or the other. So I can have like just a fresh eye on everything and the purity of mind too. I love to be fresh. I love to go in there and just see the way I see their performance. But I get attached anyway to all of them. And it's difficult to... it's difficult because you live that. I live this type of situation where you gotta deliver a routine at the end of the week because you change your routine because I was a heavy competitor with my wife. And you don't want to crash and crush dream. So I'll try to do as gently as possible.
Yeah, it must be tough to be a judge.
You know, that's one of the things that I always find difficult. Talking with a lot of people about how I look at dance and actually not only dance, but everything. And it's where very frequently, if there's one bad thing, everything is wrong. I would so love to be, I know a bunch of people who are where it's, if there's one good thing, it's wonderful. And I would so love to be able to do that just naturally.
You know, in a country where we are freedom of expression, some people like to comment on the mistake. I'm looking at it from both sides. I like to highlight what they did good and try to give them the confidence of continuing dancing in this particular genre, because you never know, maybe it's going to be a movie or a dance video where they're going to need to tag a new or put a new feather on their hat. And so if I'm discouraging this and I give them, because it's so easy to be mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to be mean, but be constructive sometimes is a little bit more difficult. You need to be experienced to do that, and I try to use my experience as a dancer, as a father. And I try to be a big brother to those kids, you know.
Had you had any experience in judging, sport dancing or ballroom dancing prior to becoming the judge? Or did they just throw you in?
Yeah, I've been a judge. I got my credential as a judge in probably 20 years ago. Because as a competitor, when you turn professional, you're allowed to judge the amateur. You're not allowed to judge the professionals. because it wouldn't be fair, obviously, because you're still in the field of competition. So I started judge amateur dancing. Like, I remember I was going to Norway, Denmark, Japan, everywhere, judging the IDSF competition, which is the amateur style. And I loved it. And I always tried to be as... using my experience and being as careful with my marks, not just just another day, just another dancer. I don't care where they come from. I don't care. What I care for is give the best judgments possible, which they deserve.
I'm gonna have to take a course with you.
Yes, we'll do that.
And then the other question I have a bunch of other questions, but one other thing that sort of strikes me as interesting, just because, is there any difference between dancing as a performer? Is there any difference between dancing for the TV and dancing for a live audience?
Oh, absolutely. The frame. You have to stay in that frame. And it's so funny because I was just talking to Jean-Sébastien, our publicist for the show, and about how it's interesting that ballroom dancing is a 360 audience to a 180 to 90 degrees, sometimes to 45 degree angle. You really have to be conscious. And I do the choreography as a choreographer for the camera. I make sure then that step is designed to go there, to finish there, because I know camera one will be there and it's time for camera three. Then I'm going with the Steadicam and I want the Steadicam to do this quarter turn, and I have to choreograph in a way then the guy can leave the stage because this next camera is going to hit and you can't even create shadow. So when I do the choreography, I really become a director and a choreographer, because TV required that type of experience. And I learned with Don, who is amazing, was an amazing director. He, the first day on the show, on the US show, my first experience, he brought me behind the camera and explained everything to me. See, that's camera one, three, four, five, seven, eight. And I was like, wow, are you really going to look at my choreography that way? Yes, my friend. And then he take one pass and he bring it back to his computer and he explain to me, I don't know, do you want to show this particular step that way? I said, no, I'd rather do it. Well, okay, we're going to go with four. We go with three. And now after that, the next time I went to the US show, I said, I need camera four, five, one, two. He was, whoa, you learn fast, my friend. Because I know you can destroy a choreography if it's not well filmed. So it's a friend or it's an enemy. So pick your fight.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'd never thought of it that way, because it feels so organic when you watch it.
Yeah, and it's funny because we can use a camera to hide sickle foot too. If somebody they've been 5 hours you work on that couple, it doesn't get the footwork of that particular step, you show the face.
It would be nice if that was possible on live performances as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing that fascinates me is this whole sort of popular versus populist side. Because ballroom dancing, to me, the concept has always been populist. Anybody can do it. Everybody can do it. You go down to Verdun on this Saturday, I think it is, and there are going to be hundreds of people there. And then whether it's So You Think You Can Dance Canada or strictly ballroom, about once every 10 years or so, suddenly it sort of blips up on the radio and gets insanely popular. How do you deal with those sort of cycles?
Well, I would say that's the same thing with the world of contemporary dancing, jazz, ballet. There is an audience, a specific audience, then very loyal to the style. Right? And then all of a sudden there is those manifestation where they bring all the style together. And So You Think You Can Dance is this amazing platform. Then they portray all the styles. So when that moment happened, people like now look not only in their particular room, they look across the room, and they have to, because your favorite dancers might be a contemporary dancer, might be a hip-hop dancer. So at the end of the day, it creates a popularity because all those particular fans of this particular style have to now all watch because it's never guaranteed this style will be at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. So you sit down and you wait for your particular style. But along the way, you get to know other style. And you get like hooked to, hey, I didn't know you could do a cha-cha on Lady Gaga. Hey, wow. But, you know, and or on Beyonce or Frank Sinatra, they're going to do a hip-hop on Frank Sinatra? What's wrong with you people? That's my Frank, you know? And then it's great. So all those bullet goes left and right and people just get attracted for a different reason and they stay. And when it goes away, people goes back to their little world, not little world, their own world, and it's fine, you know? But hopefully this platform, it's for me, it's like university. With a good university, have different place you can graduate. They all live with each other. And I think when you keep the university more with all those different genre, well, you can already express and feel the community. If you only live in your little world, you think that's the way it's supposed to be done. And Montreal have so many beautiful contribution from different cultural group. And that makes Montreal so special. I think our show is like Montreal.
Now, it's one of the noticing, just actually not noticing, because I'm suddenly realizing with Madame Gensi, I will get it one of these days. You started combining classical ballet and jazz into Le Ballet Jazz. And then there's one of my favorite local groups is Rubber Band Dance, where they're combining contemporary dance and hip-hop together, although there's a whole whack of classical ballet in there as well. And it's the sort of thing where it just seems to me everything is just slowly coming closer and closer together so that it is just dance as opposed to a hip-hop or a cha-cha-cha or a contemporary dance. It's just a wonderful sort of set of movements that express wonderful things.
Well, what do we think? There is two major influence, and I don't want to be biased, but there is two major influence in the world of dance: ballet and ballroom. Ballet is the ultimate tools to carve your body, to learn about your body, to develop your body, to the purity of your body. And ballroom is the ultimate dance to share emotion with another. I can't win the solo cha-cha. I can't win the solo waltz. I need my partner. So we're teaching connection in a different way. So ballet dancer really create and know more about their own sensitivity and potential and flexibility. And ballroom create that connection in between human beings. So the marriage of the two world is fabulous. So you live everything in between. Like hip-hop, really. Before hip-hop become like hip-hop dance and all those beautiful new company growing, they were doing that on the street. And it was more like more about complaining. I'm going to fight with my body. We're going to battle together with dance move. It's a great manifestation. And it become a very legitimate style. But I think ballet is not an accident. Ballet is pure. And I think it's for everybody, but not everybody will be asked to be a prima ballerina. It's going to be the chosen one. But everybody can start with ballet and go to different places. But I think at the end of the day, everybody's going to have to do a little waltz at one point in their life. And everybody have to pick a partner, because life is too short. We have to share.
I agree. I find it wonderful how you're also educating the audience, not just by exposing them to different styles, but also by forcing them to vote. You ask them to look very carefully and compare. So they need to educate themselves, not just about ballroom, but also how is ballroom better between this couple and that couple. And you give guidance as a judge, but in the end, the audience also puts in their 2 cents worth, or maybe a few more cents. I don't know how many cents that is. I find that is a very interesting aspect of teaching.
Absolutely. It's so essential to educate so that people can understand and not find it. It's that was 40 years ago, or you need to be past 50 to dance a waltz. That's not true, first of all. But second of all is, when you look at the popularity of the show, it's an amazing platform. So the kids now look at their favorite dancer doing a cha-cha. But does he do it right or does it wrong? Mm-hmm. So we have to explain terminologies and technique, yes. And also, just the fact that people know then cha-cha existing or still exist. I remember not long ago, like a guy I would never, he was a plumber, come up to me and say, oh, that quick step was fantastic. And I'm like, he's a plumber. And he care about a quick step. Mm-hmm. In 2010, it's great. Maybe 50 years ago, when Fred Astaire was at his best and Gene Kelly, maybe the expression quick step was more in people's lips. Now it's back. Because, first of all, it never left. But in the impression of people, it may be something was an ancient sort of dance. So now education is very important and essential for us. And it's funny, I have the chance to do a little bit of acting on the show Degrassi. And I'm a dance teacher on the show. And during those two episodes I have to film with Degrassi, it's a very heavy subject, but it's about transgender. And they pick the moment where they will be dancing to expose it to the high school. When a young lady's body but the mind of a man is trapped. And so I think it's called My Body is a Cage. And she's very attracted to this one beautiful girl, but for most people she's a girl, but in her mind she's a guy, so she wanted to dance with a girl. So she's not gay, she's a man trapped in a lady's body. So she wanted to do ballroom dancing. So she's dressed like a guy, but all of a sudden, everything goes the wrong direction. And the plot is being unveiled during this. And I'm so grateful that they use dancing tag along with this. I'm like, thank you. So yes, we have to educate people with dancing. We can show a lot of things. And for me, I always say, more dancing, less war.
Yes.
Yes, mate. It's the sort of thing where, who's if it's not my revolution, if I can't dance to it. I'm supposed to know the name. Anyhow, I'm spacing. I always space when I'm behind the microphone. What is it? Yeah, because since we are just about running out of time, there's a sort of question. What are you looking forward to most this season in So You Think You Can Dance?
Well, the show proved then. You got to be versatile. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a tough journey, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. So this season, first of all, the season of audition showed, and the Canadian take the show very, very seriously. They really cross train. They come with this amazing, those amazing weapon, different style of dance, all in the same person. And I think it's the show who pushed them to do that. Because you could be happy doing your style for life. And you don't have to look across the street if you don't want to. But that show forced you to go and train prior to the audition. Otherwise, you might gonna pass the first audition, but the next audition will be a nightmare. So you know, we televise it. Or if you don't have a television, go on YouTube. You'll know what we all about. So the kids this season came so trained. I'm so proud. So I can't wait to see what those wonderful choreographer will do with those duets. I want them to bring me to places I never went before, because they are more ready than ever. So people, if the people like season one and season two, They're going to love season 3.
Well, and there is, since we are, Richmond, doing our best to help you promote it, it is starting on Sunday, the 15th at 9 o'clock. There's the 2-hour premiere that's the Toronto auditions.
Yes.
Then you go 16, 17, 18 with Calgary, Halifax, Vancouver, Montreal. Then yep. It becomes finals week on Thursday the 19th.
Yes.
Then there is the top 20 reveal, the top 20 performance, and the top 20 results on the 22, the 23, and 24 at 9 o'clock as well.
It's dance marathon. It's going to be crazy.
And then also, Miss Von Genshi.
Ava.
That becomes much easier. Thank you very much as well. Thank you, Jean-Marc, for coming in. Ava, thank you very, very much for coming in. Ava does Dancing with Ava Von Genshi Tuesday afternoons at the Jewish General Hope and Cope Wellness Center from 12:30 to 1:15. It's, Richmond, from my understanding, it's with cancer patients, and it's a way to get them...
Oh, yes, hope and cope. Mm-hmm. But this is voluntary, and I'm very happy about it because it gives me a new world.
Oh, it's amazing.
We're going to have beautiful. Both of you back on at different times so that we can spend the entire hour with all of you. Bettina, thank you very much once again for making me look way better than I have any right to be. And, my name's Zeke. This is CKUT 90.3 FM. You've been listening to Movement Museum. Primetime is here. Positive Vibes is coming up momentarily.